Puggity.
Hey, Ben Lawrence, how's it going?
How's it going, sir?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Going okay. Yeah, I couldn't find my regular headphones, so I had to use the headphones that I keep in my car.
God, do you want to just call this off and do it some other time then?
Wait, no. What are you talking about? Oh, just because of the headphones?
Yeah.
No. So the people here don't know. But I will explain.
People are here. You're talking about your family?
No. The people listening. Mm. So yes, my family.
Okay.
maybe some other people don't understand or don't know. We're recording on Thursday normally.
We do that normally.
But this time we're recording on Friday, and the reason we're recording on Friday is because I went to a book event. As you know. Or as regular listeners will know, When Elephant Met Giraffe was picked for part of the Illinois Reads program. And the crazy thing about that is that it was out in like 2013 or 2014, something like that. So it was a big surprise. I was like, whoa, that's cool. And then after it was picked a little bit later, A Surprise for Giraffe and Elephant, my second Giraffe and Elephant book, went out of print because no one was buying it. Which is sad because I really think that it's far superior than the one available. I'm kidding, the one that's available. I love you too. But, so it won, and I was asked to participate in this thing, which was called author speed dating or something to that effect.
Okay.
It happened in Peoria, Illinois, at a hotel. I'm serious. This is a real thing. I know it sounds like a setup, but I sat at a table and people signed up for a slot to talk to me. And all these people were educators, teachers, and so on.
Wait, I kind of spaced out there for a minute. Is this what happened yesterday?
Yes, this is what happened yesterday.
Okay.
Sitting at a table, and these teachers get to come by, and they talk to me about writing and, you know, things of that nature.
These are primary school education teachers?
Yes. Well, the people who chose to speak to me were because they were, you know, in charge of kids who would be reading my books.
Right.
Ages 3 to 6. And after a little while, I finally found my pitch. You know, every author has a little bit of a pitch about, you know, this, that, or the other.
Yeah.
And my pitch that I gave them is one that I actually worked out while I was talking to you at one point, which is I hate writing.
But I love
writing is
having written.
Awful. I become a horrible person. Nobody likes me. I don't like anybody. It's the worst.
That's a great pitch you got there.
Yeah, well, and then I said, so if you've got kids who don't like writing, you'll tell them it's fine. Even people who, like, you know, sell books hate writing, at least some of them. Don't feel so bad.
Right.
You know, that sort of thing.
You're not the only one to vocalize that sentiment.
Right, exactly. We talked about this. There's somebody famous who has like something very similar. It may not be about a book. It might be about film.
Well, I don't
know.
It
could be about music.
I don't know about famous, but your friend of mine, Wayne Raleigh, actually posted on Facebook the other day that he...
Oh, yeah.
He hates writing plays, but he loves having written a play.
Yeah. And, you know, I came up with that before Wayne Raleigh, you know, not to put too fine a point on it. Wayne, I'm coming for you. No.
Yeah, speaking of your book, I gave you a bit of a shout-out at the Sketchfest Comedy Film Challenge a couple weeks ago. I used both of your books.
Nice.
I used both of your books as prizes for answering a trivia question.
Hey, that's really awesome.
So some random person who came to see the Comedy Film Challenge now has two of your books, and she seemed quite excited about it.
Oh, yay. And do you remember the question?
Yes.
That she answered?
So the questions were connected to films that we were screening. And so one of the films actually had one of your books in it.
Really?
Yes, it was a film by Rachel Jackson, and it was a the Puppet Nomicon. It's actually called Storytime for Dr. Lenny, but it's this puppet who discovers...
Oh, Dr. Lenny. Puppet, I love Dr. Lenny.
The puppet who discovers the Puppet Nomicon, but this puppet is going through books that they have. And
yeah.
And when Elephant met Giraffe, or when Giraffe met Elephant? When Elephant Met Giraffe was part of the was in the pile of books. So the question was, among other books that Dr. Lenny's pushed aside before settling on the Puppetnomicon, one was this one. It's another book that was in the film. I don't remember the name of. And the other one was When Elephant Met Whom. I wanted to make it as easy as possible.
Oh, nice.
So.
I can answer this. Giraffe.
So you win. You win two of your books.
Yay. I can reclaim my books.
Yeah.
Which is, as we've just stated, this is something that I do occasionally. I go on Amazon and eBay, and people are selling my book for like a penny or whatever. I buy it.
Seriously?
Yeah. I've got tons of books that I... They're usually library books.
You buy your own books for a penny?
Yeah, because it's cheaper than buying them from... you know, the distributor. I got to pay shipping, and it turns out to be like $3.99 or something. Oh, speaking about it's cheaper than, listen to this, everybody. I had a talk with my agent. Now, Ben, you probably already know this, but maybe not. I had a talk with my agent, and there was a collection of the Giraffe and Elephant strips. Or single panel strips. You know what I'm talking about?
I do. The ones that you drew beginning at the millennium.
Yep, exactly. And it's a book called A Very Large Book of Giraffes and Elephants. It was like 212 of these strips collected in a color, you know, paperback format. And I was selling it, and then when it came time to sell the children's book, I took the collection down because I was like, I don't want to get into trouble, you know, have this out there while these other books are being sold by Disney, you know, that kind of thing. I talked to my agent about it, and he said, look, if this collection came out in 2009, which it has, and you know, haven't changed it and it's still there, you can totally, you know, put it back out there. And so it is now available. And it brings me to something that you and I remember when Stephen McCandless was trying to find a roommate to live at Drooping Acres. Do you remember this time period?
Which time period? Because that happened a couple times where he was looking for roommates.
Well, there was a criticism that was leveled on him in that he wanted to... you know, prepare the potential roommate for what they would be dealing with. So he would go into great detail about the problems about living in the house. Do you remember this?
I do not.
Oh, yeah. He would be like, if you notice here, the living room is sunken. That's because this whole place is falling apart. Also, this is this room, and be prepared to, you know, never get to use this room because... X, Y, and Z. And this is the refrigerator. Here's some problems with that. You know, that sort of thing.
And
he
this
would just
was
go through.
Basically inside of a, like, a Craigslist ad or a...
No, when they would come to look at the house.
Oh, I see.
He would
so
take
he was,
them around and
the
point
tour.
Out all the problems.
Yeah,
exactly. Jennifer has criticized me because my reaction to reselling this collection is very similar. I'm like... this collection is $30, which is way too much for what you're getting. I can't believe it. I mean, it's a single panel on one page. It's like 212 pages, but it's on-demand publishing of color material, which is never a good buy. And so, you know, I mean, you can buy it if you want to, I guess, but I don't know if I would from what I'm getting, you know, that sort of thing. It's not the way to sell this book.
Right.
Which is, I mean, it's heartwarming. I love the little drawings and stuff like that in it. And many people have money to, like, spend on things.
Yeah.
And I get it. So, you know, maybe $30 isn't that big of a deal, but I will tell you that it is not much of a markup for how much it costs to produce. That's what I'll say. So I would charge less if I could, but I can't. And I don't know about, I have to talk to my agent again about whether or not I could sell it on Kindle. Because I could, you know, like I said, all I had to do was put it back into print. That wasn't a problem. But a Kindle version would be a totally different medium. It would be new. It would be a new book.
I'm not really familiar with sort of with the Kindle UI. Can the Kindle show images?
Yeah. Yeah, depending
not,
on what kind of Kindle you have.
It's not just a text-based thing?
That's right.
It can show color images? Well, that's handy.
Some Kindles can. Other Kindles cannot. I think they can show black and white images, though. Because I have a Kindle edition of some of my other stuff. So, we will see. Anyway, that was fun. I got to meet some people and had a really great time. They gave us lunch and snacks. And the snacks were like my equivalent of dinner. So it was great.
You can't go wrong with free lunch.
Yeah. So the Illinois Reading Council, or the IRC, as they're called, really great job. And I had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So that's why I wasn't available yesterday, which you know about. Also, as we've been stating, I have not been on Twitter, except I went on Twitter to promote the maladaptive podcast thing.
Right.
And if you remember, I wrote to you specifically and said, Ben, this is all I've done. Now, Twitter is doing this thing. It never used to do this. I think it's because I never had any. They're emailing me and say, Paul, look at the 12 notifications that you have pending at Twitter.
Right.
Which I don't look at. But I kind of think that maybe I should sometimes. And the reason is because when I signed on, oh my gosh, Ben, I'm sorry, I'm sleepy. when I signed on for the, because I've been keeping my dream journal still, which means writing stuff down when I wake up, and sometimes it's hard to get back to sleep. But when I was going on to promote the Maladaptive podcast, I got a notification that I had something from Jose Amador, and I looked at it, and he had a correction.
Oh, did he?
That he put to my Twitter account, which is, from what I understand, and since I'm not looking at Twitter, I can't say for sure, but Ray Williams does not do the voice of the Hawk in the new episodes. In the new episodes, Rachel Jackson does the voice of the Hawk.
Yeah, I never said that Ray did the voice of the Hawk in Jose and the Hawk. I said that Ray I said that Ray did the voice of the Hawk in the Panel Jumper.
Yes. And maybe it wasn't a correction. Maybe we were wondering who does the voice of the Hawk. It's Rachel Jackson. But Ray is still a character who I can't remember. Maybe he's playing the mayor. I'm kidding. That's take off on one of his usernames. But maybe he is. But maybe he isn't. Yeah. Anyway, Jose the Hawk.
Yeah.
There's still maybe a Kickstarter. Is there? I'm not on the internet anymore.
I think it's over now. I think they've done it. Mm. They were successful. They hit a couple of their stretch goals. I feel like I've been a bit absent for the first 15 minutes of this because I was trying to deal with a an issue from a client of mine.
Uh-oh.
Where something wasn't working, and I was trying to figure out why it wasn't working. And by all accounts, it should be working, but it's not working.
Oh, I hate that. Did you figure it out, or is it still a problem?
No, it's still a problem. I'm just going to ignore it until we're done here.
Oh, yay! Okay, procrastination is good.
It's not a terribly important. Well,
your client doesn't listen to our podcast, do they?
What's that? No. This is somebody who doesn't know I do this. It's weird though. It's without getting into specifics. It's a URL mapping And so when you type in, like, you know, webaddress.com/episode number, like webaddress.com/25, it's supposed to automatically redirect you to webaddress.com/the name of this blog. But instead, it just says, oops, this page doesn't exist. However,
okay, I just want to make sure it's happening. The error is happening for you as well.
The error. Well, see, here's the thing. When I log into the blog page and then I try it, it works.
Yeah.
But when I am not logged in as an administrator, it doesn't work. It's the weirdest thing. I don't
maybe
know
there's
why.
Maybe there's some sort of flag. You know, like go live flag that isn't hit.
It's
allowing the admin to see it and not the, because there are things like, I'm not saying that that's what's happening. But that was one of the problems that used to happen. The other one that I had all the time was that people would have their host file redirect and then they would forget to take the line out on their host file. So they'd be like, why does this work? What's happening?
Yeah. I'm wondering, I don't know why it's not working. What I think I might do is, so A of all, I'm going to go to the web page, the blog post that it needs to redirect to. So I click on pages. This is terribly, terribly exciting, but this is the kind of fun thing I get to do for money. Let's see. So I go to...
Oh, I love this kind of stuff. This is good for me.
Yeah.
Sorry, other listeners.
It's a where is it? It's a Squarespace blog, and I gotta tell you, I'm not a fan of the Squarespace.
Ben, do you realize that Squarespace sponsors every single podcast in the universe?
I know, and since they don't sponsor ours, I can say I'm not a fan.
We are Mavericks, copy Ben. That's all I'm saying.
Let's see. Everything else looks fine. I don't see blah, blah, blah. Nothing says to not do what I want it to do. All right. Save that. Go back to advanced and then go back to... Do you know if, while I'm doing this, do you know if Jennifer has submitted corrections? Did she tell you she had?
Because I haven't looked yet. I'll find out. I'll find out from her. I'll walk outside and ask.
You are mapping, and then let's just delete all this.
So I'm
delete all that.
Walking.
Click save.
Oh, hey Jennifer.
Now, retype.
Ben's troubleshooting a problem with his host files, or not host files, his URL whatever thingies. So he can't look at his computer right now. He wants to know if you submitted corrections at all. Oh, she did. Yes, right.
And then let's she did. Actually, close that. And she did submit corrections?
She did.
All right.
Yes.
Whoops. That's not going to work because I mistyped it. And then...
Oh, no.
Yay, it works. All right.
It works. Hey, we did it.
I.
All right.
Who knows? Who knows?
Oh, wait. Jennifer is
saying something.
All right.
So, go out again.
Go here.
Do you need me to read him out?
No, not at all.
No,
he just wasn't looking at his computer. He didn't know if he needed to look him up or not.
Also
thank
called
you, Jennifer.
Killing Time while I was distracted from other things. Normally in other respectable podcasts, that would have been edited out, but not us. All right.
Nope.
Hey,
so yeah,
we have corrections. Do you want to set up corrections? Because every episode you're like, hey, this is why we do corrections.
Oh yeah. Basically, we Ben and I decided a while back that people got an inflated sense of what they know because they can just look something up on Google and they can go like, oh yeah, I know about this, and then they look it up and it's as though they already knew it, even though they didn't. They find out something like in a minute and then talk to you like you're dumb for not knowing it. And I had speculated to Ben, what if we did a thing where we need to like talk about stuff or remember stuff or whatever, but we never actually look stuff up online. And then that's the podcast. Keep it wrong, like that. And Ben said, okay, sure, whatever, Paul. I'm sure you were more enthusiastic than that. But we set up an email address, which, Ben, give out that email address.
Ben's email at yahoo.com at gmail.com.
And the basic idea is that you, the listener, can correct us if we say something that's wrong. And also, and I always bring this up, you know, late or forget to bring it up, but you can also ask us questions that you would like to try, that you would like us to try to answer without looking up on Google. I forgot that that was an aspect of it. And nobody does these things.
Well, we...
It normally, also... except, no, Stephen McCandless and my wife Jennifer do send in corrections. And yeah. Jennifer has also sent in questions before in the past.
Because one of the things that we used to do, we don't no longer do this, is we would spend entire shows just trying to answer things. We would look up questions on the Google, and like we would autofill certain questions like what is or why is, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And we would try to answer it, and we would see if we got those answers right. And it just kind of evolved into us getting it wrong and keeping it wrong.
Yeah, and what used to happen is we would try to answer questions, and then Jennifer would actually look up and say, okay, well, for this question you said this, when actually this. And then I don't know if we devolved in some way or we just started...
I think we just got lazy.
You know, playing to this more. Yeah, yeah. But we've learned that there's enough stuff to correct without us trying to answer questions. We're just wrong a lot.
We can fill a good 15, 20 minutes with corrections. Speaking of corrections, hey, Paul, I got some corrections. You want to give us the theme song?
Corrections.
Ding, ding. All right, number one.
All right.
We were talking about Harrison Ford in the Indiana Jones franchise, and I could not get the name right. So then, I think I eventually did get the name right. It's Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
There we are.
But I do say in it that I thought that they found the crate that the Ark was in. She says they do not find the crate with the Ark. However, much of the movie concerns Hangar 51. Huh, aliens. Hangar 51. Probably has no relation whatsoever to Area 51. So creative.
Oh, hey, speaking of which, I can tell you this. Area 51 isn't actually Area 51. It's Area S1. People just think that the S is a
That's
5.
That's some typography voodoo right there.
It stands for a site one, actually. It's not even an area.
All right, number two.
So many problems, Ben.
Number two.
Okay, go ahead.
Quaaludes, or methylaqualone, I guess is how you pronounce that, are a tranquilizer. Like Xanax or Valium, hugely popular in the 70s, some folks got caught on the upper-downer cycle. Speed to be awake and alert, ludes to calm down and sleep. This still happens, but the drugs are basically the same. Using it like a roofie would work just fine with alcohol, but would probably just make a sober person tired. So yeah, ludes have to be inside of a drink, I guess. Or not inside, but with a
drink.
Well,
and for what the reason that you brought it up in the first place, I'm guessing that if one is at a sort of... den of iniquity or whatever. The idea
the Playboy
of,
Mansion.
Hey, well, hey, I'm not.
Well, that's
anything.
What we were talking about when we brought up.
I'm not liable or anything. The idea that alcohol would be available to be used in that manner, probably reasonable for one to assume, I guess.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yay! Yeah. Yay! Hooray! Quaaludes. All right.
Yeah, yeah. History of problematic
hashtag
partying.
Context. Number three, the album cover of Unfinished Music Number 1, Two Virgins. Oh, we were talking about the John Lennon album with John naked on the front on the cover.
Oh yeah.
And I couldn't remember the name of it. The name of it is I guess it's just more commonly referred to as Two Virgins because I don't ever remember seeing the Unfinished Music Number 1 part. Was a picture of John and Yoko. Totally nude, standing next to each other. That's actually not what I was thinking of.
No, I know what you're thinking
the
of.
The picture I was thinking of was Yoko had
we'll
clothes
have to correct
on.
The correction.
Yeah, Yoko had clothes on, and John was naked, and he was like curled up on her. But no, I know what.
Yeah.
But that,
he's
that,
curled in like the fetal position on a bed.
Exactly.
And...
But the picture where they're just standing right next to each other is naked is actually a thing. I mean, she's not making that. Jennifer's not making that up. That is actually a thing.
No.
So yeah, but it's
we're
not,
talking about a different.
It's not the thing
a,
I was
thinking. It's a black
of.
And white photo. It's
yeah.
A, it's a yeah. He's and, naked and she's. I don't know if she's clothed or if she just has covers on. I think she might have covers on.
In which one? Where they're standing or where they're laying down?
Where they're laying down.
I think she has clothes on.
You know, you probably know better than me as far as that goes. For those of you that don't know, Ben is a Beatles fan. They say that you're either a Beatles fan or Rolling Stones fan. Ben is a Beatles fan. I am a fan of The Art of Noise and The Butthole Surfers.
Ah, but wait, Paul.
So the,
there is more.
Yes. Oh, okay.
So,
wait, is this about John and Yoko? Or,
yeah, she
or
says,
not?
I thought you were referring to the Annie Leibovitz photo of Yoko and John on a bed. I guess that is what I was referring to. I thought that was an album
that,
cover.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's just a picture of them. She is fully clothed,
yay.
And he is curled up with her naked. That photo was taken on December 8th, 1980. He was murdered that same day at 10:50 p.m.
Jennifer Pratt for the win. Good job on that sleuthing.
I've actually I've been to the Dakota where he was murdered. I stood in the doorway where he was murdered.
Oh no!
Yeah,
I went to the Sniper's Nest at the Book Depository. They won't let you into where the Sniper's Nest is.
Yeah,
it's,
and do you know
it's?
Do you know why Bill Hicks says they won't do that?
Time travelers?
No, Bill Hicks says you can go to the Book Depository, but where the Sniper's Nest is all glassed off because they knew that if tourists were able to go and sit down all day every day, people would just say, "There's no fucking way."
Yeah. That's a really good point. I often have stated that when I went into that Book Depository, there were so many metal detectors and things like that.
Yeah.
Security is tight.
What, like...
And they were like,
they're
well...
trying to prevent people,
people
from just firing out the window?
Well, that's the thing, is that why, or is it because... This is my... Ben, my honest theory. Raise my right hand. This is my theory.
Yeah.
They don't know if time travel is possible. But just in case, they want to stop people from going back and trying to mess with the past. And they know that that'll be that's a prime location that people will try to run to and run through if time travel were possible. So
what?
I'm throwing that out there.
So here's another time travel conspiracy theory. So
yeah.
What if it came out that John F. Kennedy was actually responsible for starting World War III? And so he had to go away, and Lee Harvey Oswald was tasked with that. However, Lee Harvey Oswald's not that good of a shot. So the time traveler is actually the dude with the kill shot behind the grassy knoll.
Oh, hey, that's not bad. That's not bad at all.
Because it's like, I'm not getting into the book repository. I don't have time.
There was a guy whose name I forget, and I feel bad about this, but it has been a while back, who did a comic. Okay, so I was doing a comic at the Maneater in University of Missouri Columbia called GOG. It was G-O-G. It was a four-panel strip. And there was another guy who was also doing a strip called Yellow Jack. And Yellow Jack was fun. I liked it a lot. But he and I were talking, and he said, JFK actually killed himself. He wielded the gun that he shot himself with a third arm that nobody knew that he had.
What?
And he said, and if you think about it this way, JFK's brain is missing from the Smithsonian, and so is his third arm, which I liked a lot.
You can't argue with that
ones,
logic.
Right, exactly. I heard that there was one that the Secret Service agent inside the car with Kennedy had a gun concealed in his wrist, like either like Spider-Man's web shooters or, right.
Or
like
some
actually
sort of
implanted, depending.
Secret Service agent's gun holster.
Right, right, right. And he shot him with a fish pellet, quote unquote, which I don't get why that's something.
A fish pellet?
I don't get it.
Like fish food?
Like I said, it doesn't make any sense. It's crazy, right? The one that I like, my favorite one still is the squib theory. You know, because they say that you know, there's no way you could have hit the guy with that. The idea is that JFK did go in for back surgery before he was shot. And they say that he wasn't able to duck because he was in some sort of a brace.
Wait, is that true? I didn't know that part. Did he actually go in for back surgery before the assassination?
This is what I've heard. I don't know.
Made out of whole cloth quotes for this conspiracy theory.
I heard...
Like, is that a fact that he was in a brace?
That he went in for back surgery, and that's why he couldn't duck
when the
shots were being fired. But my hypothesis goes further. While he was in for back surgery, they also implanted a small bomb in his brain. And when Lee Harvey Oswald shot, they pushed the button, the bomb exploded, and that's why he didn't have to be that good of a shot in order to get the kill shot, because the kill shot, the bullet was already in his brain, but it was a tiny explosive.
So
that's my hypothesis that I've always pull out whenever people talk about the JFK assassination.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm not familiar with all of the controversy surrounding the assassination. Like, I couldn't tell you, like, why the CIA allegedly wanted him dead. I don't remember all that fun stuff. Right. I saw Oliver Stone's movie JFK. I think I was in high school.
So
I don't remember it all that well.
That would probably work out because I think I was in college when it came out.
Yeah, I do remember.
And you and I are 3 years apart.
I watched it long enough ago that I think we rented it and it came on two VHS tapes because the movie was too dang long.
Yeah. let's see, what else? I know that Brett Fetzer, your friend and mine, his father is a JFK conspiracy theorist.
That's right.
He's written a book about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Professor Fetzer, what's your function?
Oh, hey, just out of curiosity, any more corrections or was
that
No,
it? That was that's it for corrections for today.
Okay. The one thing I also I'll say is that I learned recently that Yoko and Frank Zappa played together on something.
Okay.
Yoko Ono, Frank Zappa, and John Lennon. And John Lennon and Yoko Ono took the song of his that they played on and put themselves down as the writers of the song and called it and gave it a different title. Now, the thing that I don't know about this is that people who say that happened seem to indicate that they did this without Frank Zappa's knowledge or approval. I don't know if that's true. Who's to say he didn't say, yeah, go ahead and retitle it? And...
Let me see if I get the facts straight. So the three of them played a song. I'm assuming that the three of them wrote this song together.
No. Frank Zappa wrote a song.
Oh, the three of them played a Frank Zappa song.
And then the three of them performed it together.
And then,
performed his song.
And then John
together.
And Yoko released it, saying that it was a copyright John Lennon and Yoko Ono.
That's right. And my hypothesis again is this:
how will they get away with that?
Frank Zappa, right? Maybe said, "Yeah, man, that's cool," or whatever, and let them do it. And the reason that he had them change it was so that they could get the rights to set it out. I don't know if you know, because music companies are weird, right? There's a difference between Frank Zappa owning that song and a music label owning that song. And so I'm just saying maybe he was cool with it.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, maybe that was because I know that he and Yoko Ono worked together again after John Lennon's death.
So there wasn't any bad blood between them.
That's my hypothesis. I don't know for sure, not any bad blood, but there is sort of a fun sort of tongue-in-cheek thing. The song of theirs, or the album, or whatever it is, I heard an audio clip of it, and Frank Zappa entitled it A Small Eternity with Yoko Ono. And it's her kind of yodeling, sort of, while other stuff is happening.
In that way that she does.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
some might call it screeching.
Yes, being called A Small Eternity, although poetic, might also be a diplomatic way of going, this goes on for too long, which is fun. You know me, though. I'm a big Yoko Ono fan of her performance art. I think it's great.
Yeah, I'm not.
And by that, I don't mean the musical stuff that she did. I mean there are books that she puts out for little experiments for people to try.
Yeah.
And I think they're wonderful. And like I said, this is the book Grapefruit. When I read the book Grapefruit, I was like, I get it.
Yeah, you mentioned that last week, the Grapefruit book.
I get what, I don't, all of the things, I'm just retreading them. But I get what John Lennon saw in her. I get what he liked. Because some of the stuff, especially if you think of like Yellow Submarine and things like that.
Yeah.
The time period of the 60s, in that era. Wait, was Yellow Submarine in the late 60s or was it in the early 70s?
No. All the Beatles stuff ended at 1970.
Okay, so that period of the late 60s.
Yeah.
There's a feeling. I can't really describe it, but
peace and love. Peace and love.
It's not just hippies, man. You know, it's this other thing. There's another side of it. I can't describe it, but her work feeds into it.
Here's something that we can talk about. So
sure,
I've been a big fan of the Beatles basically since I was, I think, like in the fifth grade. Actually, no, I want to say since I started listening to music. My mom had all the Beatles albums, so I've been listening to the Beatles since I was a kid. But I never really became like a big Beatles fan until I was in the sixth grade or so. And the Monkees were my gateway band to the Beatles, sadly enough. But
I really love the Monkees.
Yeah, I think that was the way for a lot of kids in my generation.
Yeah.
However, so I idolized John Lennon. But it's come out that John was not, for all of his peace and love promotion, he was not a very pleasant person, allegedly. He physically and emotionally abused his families, and so it's one of those things where when you find out like somebody you like has done something terrible, can you still like their art? Can I listen to John Lennon songs? Can I listen to Beatles songs with a clear conscience? Or apparently like Eric Clapton, at one point in his life, was, I don't want to call him a white supremacist, but he was very jingoistic in terms of like making Britain white again. He said something at a concert. I don't exactly remember what he said, but it was very much, Britain needs to reclaim her heritage, sort of the Make America Great Again style movement. And I'm like, man, I really like Eric Clapton, but I can't get behind that.
Was this when he was in Traffic, or was it
I think he was a solo. Later than no, that. I think he was a solo artist at this point. I don't think it was with
because
Derek
I was
Domino
say,
or Cream or anything like that.
Let's see. What was the drummer's name?
What drummer?
Beware, Mr. Was it for Cream and
I have no idea
and Traffic and oh god, this is gonna drive me nuts. I need to figure it out.
Keep it wrong, Paul. Just make up a name and move on.
No. Beware, Mister. It starts with an M. He's a red hair. Animal was probably based on him.
I thought Animal was based on the drummer for The Who.
Maybe so, but if you see him, I would say it's not necessarily true. I wonder if the fact that his name starts with an M is wrong, and it's just beware, Mister.
You remember how we spent almost an entire episode with you trying to remember something?
Yeah.
So, I said, make up a name and move
maybe
on.
Maybe it'll come to me later. Maybe it'll come to me later. All right.
So anyway,
but the fact is, the drummer, he traveled to Africa and was big into African stuff and all that. He was also the drummer for Traffic, and that's what I was going to say. There would be a problem, maybe. If that happened.
Oh, right. I didn't even know about the band Traffic, so.
Oh, Traffic is great. In my opinion, the song John Barleycorn Must Die is a really good song, and they do that song.
So how do I square, and who knows, how do I square liking good art by bad people?
Right. We've kind of dodged a couple of bullets as far as that goes. Most of the people that we like seem to be, like, generally good, except for example, Bill Cosby.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I honestly, we've talked about this maybe before.
I think we have.
I loved the idea of sharing his albums with Betty and, like, talking about, yeah, this is Bill Cosby and he's a good... You know, when she was a kid, I would Zerbert her, and I'd be like, maybe this is weird, maybe, you know, because do kids actually like this? This is true. I was like, Bill Cosby did this, should be fine, right. Should be wholesome, no problems whatsoever. Now I'm like, oh my gosh.
Bill Cosby himself, every time it came on HBO, I would watch it, even though I'd seen it a number of times.
And so, I don't share it with her. I've stopped... You know, when I bring up Bill Cosby, lots of times it's, you know, in a derisive way. Now, in the same way, I have done bad things in my life. You know, I am not a 100% great person.
You would never be elected to office, is that what you're saying?
No, probably not. Have I gone to that level? No. Not that I could say, but I will say that there are people in the world who would be like, Paul Goody was not a cool guy,
right?
In this interaction I had with him, so I'm always careful when I try to do some sort of holier than thou thing. But I will say this: I personally, right, know that there are times when I've liked a piece of art and then been like, I can't like this anymore because of the person that did it and because of what they did, if that makes sense. So, like, if someone who, like, Mr. Rogers, bless him, right?
Yeah.
All accounts, wonderful guy. And all that. If it ever came out that he, you know... was an animal abuser, right? Let's say,
right.
And then you watch him talk to the tiger, in the land of make believe, and you find out that he killed and ate 15 tigers, and there's a scene where he's talking to this tiger, and there he's like, I'd love to have you for dinner somewhere. I would never be able to watch that again. I'd be like, can you believe that he was killing and eating tigers when this thing happened? You know, I'd feel bad. In the same way, you know, if an artist is known to be abusive towards women, and there's a song that has to do with their relationship with women, or there's a scene in a movie they've written that has to do with relationships of men and women, you know, any of that stuff, I can't separate it.
It
I no longer can enjoy.
Well, when it's that connected, it does get cringeworthy. And you know, if an artist wrote a song about, you know, their terrible treatment of women, and it comes out later on that they were actually treating women terribly, then you're like, okay, well, maybe that was a cry for help, or maybe that was just bragging. But the other stuff. Right? The other stuff. Like, let's say, you know, John Lennon was, you know, he punched his wife and threw her down in anger or whatever, and she was legitimately scared of him. Does that make, you know, listening to the song All You Need Is Love different than before you knew that?
Well, and the way I would say this, as far as that stuff goes, you know, you project the person that you want to be, and then there's a person that you are.
Yeah.
And sometimes people are running away from that, you know? They're running away from, and that's, you know, we talk about splitting where people are like, well, I'm not that guy, but you are because you were the one who did it, you know, that sort of thing. And when we think about, I mean, I think about this with Giraffe and Elephant all the time. Good, wholesome, you know, just, you know, pure happiness and all that.
It can cure happiness?
No, pure happiness.
Oh, pure happiness.
Pure,
okay.
Pure happiness, yes.
doctor, I got a case of happiness. I don't know how to get rid of it.
Oh man. all right, so take one of these I Remember You pet shelter commercials. Oh, man. Sarah McLachlan, the I Remember You pet shelter commercial. It made me sad all the time. Listen to It's Quiet Uptown by Hamilton. or in Hamilton. By Hamilton. That's
by
right. Lin-Manuel Miranda.
That's right.
Now.
Time travel.
Changed his name to Hamilton. Finally.
Time travel has finally come true and is infiltrating every single piece of art. Hamilton, starring Hamilton.
So the thing I would say is that I'm always very nervous around hippie goodness. Like, hey man, I'm not goodness, like, you know, because there are good people, but I'm talking like, hey man, whatever you want to do, that's cool, and all that. That attitude makes me nervous because that boundary is going to come slamming down at some point in time, and it's going to be about something really weird.
Well, you need social order. I'm not just talking about being nice to your fellow man, and like not hitting people, but there needs to be a social order. And I think hippies on one side and anarchists on the other just kind of destroy that. And
so what you're saying, Ben, is that we need to take America back from the
hippies,
like bring back law and order. No, I get it. Here's the thing. There's a great principle by the Discordians have it that is imposition of order leads to escalation of chaos. Right?
Yeah.
The two things are linked together, and the more rules you try to put on something, the crazier things can become, right? That's how bureaucracy works and things like that. But in the same way, if you have too much freedom, eventually order has to show up, because otherwise everything falls apart. So
yeah,
it's a cycle, you know, you just have to kind of work with it.
I think we're in everything is about to fall apart part of the cycle.
Yeah. You know, it's really pretty awesome not paying attention to the news at all. Because when something really bad happens, then I find out about it.
Oh, there's
and it's
there's something awesome happening right now, which you should pay attention to, because it's going to be awesome.
Oh, is it Tom Petty dying?
No, that's not awesome. What are you talking about?
I was kidding. I threw that out there because it's something bad. I always thought Bob Dylan would outlive him.
And you were right, sir.
And I was right. No, yeah. I was kidding. The opposite is true. I thought Bob Dylan would die first.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and Keith Richards still lives.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true. Is it about the FCC?
It is not about the FCC, although I don't imagine that being awesome when it happens. This is more of a Nelson laugh towards our federal government, even though it's terrible for everyone if this does happen, apparently.
Yeah.
So the news came out that Secretary of State Rex Tillerson called Trump an effing moron and threatened to resign last summer. And so it has come out.
Last summer?
Yeah, he threatened to resign last summer and he had to be convinced to stay on as Secretary of State.
Okay, I got you.
And so, and I guess last summer is when he called Trump the moron. And so all the gotcha. Late night hosts are having a field day with this. But it has since come out that so Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, Treasury of the Secretary Steven Mnuchin, and God, I can't remember who the third one was. Some high ranking federal official. Okay. So there's three of them have entered into a suicide pact. Oh, I think it's General Mattis.
I was about to say suicide.
They're calling it Mad Dog Mattis. Him. I can't remember his post.
Yeah.
That's his name. Anyway, they're calling it a suicide pact. What they're planning on doing is if Trump goes after one of these guys and either. I guess the trigger is to fire them. So if one of these guys gets fired, all three of them will leave their post.
Ooh.
All three of these secretaries will leave their post. And so it's just like it's watching our federal government sort of implode in real time, and a lot of people are kind of like laughing at this, but also, why are we taking such joy from the complete meltdown of our social order in the government?
Well, let me just put a voice of reason to this, Ben. How many people are there in the United States?
How many people? Oh, we've tried to answer this question before. 300 million. I want to say 300 million.
Oh, boy, Jennifer, I'm sorry if we didn't pay attention and got this completely wrong. Wouldn't you agree, Ben, that every single man, woman, and child in the United States should have a chance to hold a high-level cabinet position in the United States government? Right?
I think...
We'll get there eventually.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah, sure. Get rid of them. Bring new people in. This is something that I believe was brought up by maybe it was the Daily Show guy. Maybe it was Trevor Noah. Maybe it was someone on Twitter. But the idea that strongman dictatorship type things.
Yeah.
High level of turnover of major positions.
Right.
Is the norm. It makes everybody constantly nervous.
Yeah. Well, because
as a tool for control.
There's a high level of turnover because if you don't like somebody, you kill them.
Yeah. This is firing, more than killing. But still, it has the same effect.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I gotta say, not to put too fine a point on it. You hire somebody who fires people, be famous for firing. Ben, he'd be famous for firing the people, and now we say, don't fire people? How come? Why? Anyhow.
Because...
So that's news.
Ratings. Because ratings, yeah. Paul.
It took me a while to find out about the Las Vegas thing, but I did, eventually.
Yeah, I wasn't going to bring it up unless you brought it up, but yeah.
Yeah.
I got a lot
so
of.
That's something.
I have a lot of. So unlike you, I spend a lot of time on social media, and I do have a number of very, very conservative friends, very pro gun, very. I don't want to call them pro Trump because I don't think they are. But you know, Trump's their guy, so they're behind him. But very, very pro gun, but also very racist, and so it was.
Pro-gun and racist? Now that's crazy.
Well, I don't want to say that all pro-gun people are racist, but I'm.
And neither do I, Ben. But I'm sorry, everyone.
But, I mean, and I'm.
I was kidding.
I'm inferring the racism because it's very much. Oh, the the shooter turned out to be a rich white guy? Oh, let's not rush to conclusions. Let's not jump
well,
to judgment.
I saw something kind of about that, and this is I am reminded back when the bombing that McVeigh did.
Yeah, the Oklahoma City bombing. Building. The
When it occurred, the local papers ran these political cartoons of a terrorist who was like, "I am confused. Where's the law?" And then there's the devil is there, and he says he's with your victims because the guy's in hell instead of heaven, like he thought he was going to be. What guy? The imaginary Muslim guy that they thought did the Oklahoma City bombing.
Right.
It was in several different papers.
Yeah.
And yeah, did they print a retraction? Nope.
Probably not. This just tells you that the
same sort of deal.
The anti-Islamic sentiment has been around longer than just 9/11. 9/11 didn't create that.
Yeah, I feel like I really need to address this, Ben. I'm sorry to the gun owners that aren't racists. I know that you exist. And I'm not trying to be funny. I know that you exist.
I said not all gun control enthusiasts are racist. Yeah. Or anti-gun control.
I know that there are people of color who, you know, are proud gun owners. I was being flippant, and I apologize. Proactively. Before don't need to say anything.
Actually,
I get it,
Paul.
And I
sad,
but no, you can't.
No,
of
Paul,
course, that's your right
to say
things.
Sad to say that all of the racist pro gun owners who've been listening to this podcast have stopped listening now, and so they're not going to hear your clarification.
I feel bad about it. Sorry. Hey, speaking of clarifications, Betty.
Oh God.
Congratulations, I arrived.
Ah, oh, my eyes! Ah, oh, the brightness, it kills. I've been sitting in a dark room for an hour. So this is Betty.
Hi, Betty.
Hello, Betty.
It's your boy.
So actually, Paul, I do have a question.
Oh yeah. Here, I'm putting here, Betty.
Not
Jesus,
again.
Jesus.
Okay, here we are. I don't have to ask it. So your dad and I. Hi, Betty.
Oh, she was saying not again to using the thing that was just in Dad's ear to listen to the...
Yeah. No, it's just that earbuds are too big for my ears.
All right, so your dad and I talked about a couple of stand-up comedians during this show. So I want to ask, who is your favorite stand-up comedian? And here, I'm going to give you a difficulty. You cannot mention Paul F. Tompkins.
Frack!
What if Paul F. Tompkins is her favorite comedian, though? That's all right. I'm sorry. Ben's rules. Who's your favorite stand-up comedian?
You.
I've only done stand-up a handful of times. It doesn't count. Don't.
No. Yeah. If you've done stand-up, that means that you are one. You're my favorite. Congratulations.
Oh, thanks, Betty. I'm Betty's favorite stand-up.
All right. Since I didn't mention that she couldn't answer, have you as an answer, then I will accept it, but I still will put an asterisk after it.
Here's a difficulty question. Betty, do you have a favorite female stand-up comedian?
No! Well, I mean, there was this one lady that I remember, but I can't really remember her name.
What did she do? Was she on TV or was she in real life?
She was probably like doing a radio thing.
Lauren Lapkus?
Maybe.
Sarah Silverman?
No.
Maria Bamford?
I don't remember her name!
Oh, Maria Bamford, maybe.
I remember her name. I don't remember her name.
Paula
Betty,
Poundstone?
Do you remember her name?
No, I don't remember her name.
Well, that's fine. We'll just keep naming off female stand-up comedians until
Betty,
you do remember.
Who's your favorite YouTube channel person who's a woman?
Hmm. That sure is a toughie.
Are there too many to choose from? Or do you not know any? Because you only watch boys on YouTube.
No, I watch women sometimes.
She only watches boys on YouTube.
It's just that I can't decide.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right, I'll trust you with this one. What are you looking at me like that for?
No reason.
Okay, so, all right, Ben.
Ben, you're not going to let you in on a secret.
That's actually a pretty difficult question. Post. I don't really watch YouTube channels that are fronted by singular personalities, so I can't really tell you who my favorite female or male YouTube personality is.
What things? Oh, those things. No, we're not going to. Okay. So, Ben. Jennifer came in and wanted to make sure that we didn't touch the crocheted, not the crocheted stuff, the needle, the cross stitch stuff. There's cross stitch stuff in here, and we got to be careful with it.
Cross stitch.
Ben, can you hear us?
Okay.
Can you hear
us? Yeah.
Okay. So.
All right.
We're
going
to be secret.
We're being secret.
Alrighty. Well, Monday. If you can't tell the entire class, Paul and Betty, then I'm afraid we're going to have to bring this to a close.
We're being secret with you.
Oh, wait. Mom's going to be listening to this.
She's listening to it on Monday, though.
Oh.
So, Monday.
Yeah.
When this comes out.
Yes.
Is Columbus Day.
Yeah.
Betty is off school. Yeah. It also happens to be Jennifer and my anniversary. And so I will be taking the day off of work.
Yeah.
So.
And also, I'm getting 4 teeth pulled.
Oh yeah, Betty's getting 4 teeth pulled.
Happy anniversary on Indigenous Peoples Day, which is what it's called here in Seattle.
Wait, is it really?
Yeah, they've done away with Columbus Day.
Oh, that's perfect. That's great.
Yeah.
Indigenous Peoples Day.
Yep. It's sort of like a big F you to Columbus.
Well, a lot of Italians I know aren't too happy that that's the only day that they get. Whenever the Italians are like, hey, you know, what about Italian heritage stuff? And they go, well, you have Columbus Day. That's like, oh, thanks. Yeah,
I don't understand why the Italians would be too concerned about having a holiday. The Germans aren't concerned about having a holiday.
This again.
The British certainly don't.
Do you guys want me to leave?
No, Betty, not at all. No, Ben, it's not that. It really isn't. It isn't that the Italians are saying, oh, I'd love to have a holiday. Why can't I get one? All right, Betty is not interested in this conversation. It's more that... that people, whenever they talk about different ethnic groups having holidays, they say, oh, right, we have Columbus Day. That's our holiday. Thanks, but not everybody, just the people I'm reading. And if you think about it, some Irish folks are upset about it being St. Patrick's Day because St. Patrick, from what I understand, was not Irish. He was British.
Hello,
that's what I hear. Kashmir Pulaski, though, was Polish.
Well, also,
so there you
I
go.
Mean,
that's one.
The Americans have a great
earphone.
Track record of co-opting all
hello.
Of these different holidays and making
Ben's
it their own. Say, St. Patrick's Day. Cinco de Mayo is another one of them that's kind of an embarrassment here.
Hey, what day is Cinco de Mayo this year? Ha ha!
Hey, yeah. I think it's
joke.
On a Thursday. Hey.
Oh,
anyway.
If there's something weird going on with the audio,
I think it's time to go, Paul. I think it's time to say goodnight until next week.
Oh yeah,
the microphone.
Betty is trying her best to make feedback happen by holding the earphone to the microphone,
and so
I'm guessing it is not going to work, but who knows.
All right.
we'll find out
maybe next week on the Goody Lawrence podcast.
Hey, keep it wrong, Ben.
Keep it wrong, Paul. Talk
to
you later.
All right, talk to you
yeah,
later.
Bye.
I mean, boop.